We are proud to say that BetDSI have rejoined us once again as one of our keynote sponsors on 3 yards per carry. We welcome them and we welcome you to join up with them. The NFL season obviously kicks off at the weekend. The college football season has just got underway, but it's not just limited to football. The baseball playoffs are coming. There are a myriad of other sports out there that you could bet on. There's entertainment things, there's politics things at betdsi.com. They have a great app. I've used it myself. I know the boys have used it too. They have a great mobile interface. And you know, this year you can get 101% match bonus on your first deposit of up to $1,000. That's 101% match bonus on your first deposit of up to $1,000. Use the code YARDS101. As always, YARDS101. BetDSI for all of your betting needs and other ones that you probably didn't even know existed. YARDS101 with BetDSI.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another episode of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. I have Simon Clancy with me here. I have Chris Kaufman. And this is your New England Patriots preview show. And good Lord, if you saw that game last week, what can the Patriots do to us? We just lost 59-10 to a team that's considered nowhere near as good as the Patriots. And you saw what the Patriots did to the Steelers. So something even more embarrassing can be on the way. So we're going to talk some other things to start this show. Chris, you had some open-ended questions for us.
First, Simon, are you sniffing smelling salts like Adam Gase over there? I mean, that's kind of what I'm hearing in the background.
Oh, no, I'm watching Texans-Saints.
Oh, okay. Are you crying over it?
I might be chewing gum. That might be the other thing.
So, first open-ended question. Actually, I had two, and one of them was, like, you know, semi-serious. Another one was supposed to be kind of funny, and then I forgot the second one. So, instead of that funny one, I wanted to ask. I sent you around the picture of Gardner Minshew. What does Gardner Minshew look like to you? Like, Alf, you had one.
Yes, he looks like a detective from a bad 1970s movie.
I'll take it. That's good. Simon, what does Gardner Minshew look like to you?
I haven't seen the picture, so I don't know.
You've never seen Gardner Minshew?
I mean, I have seen him, but I haven't seen the picture.
Oh, okay. You have to see this picture, Simon. It's glorious.
It's a great polo. It's a great polo.
It's in the WhatsApp chat.
You know what he looks like to me? He looks like your girlfriend's estranged father.
Yeah. That went to prison and you don't know why he went to prison for?
Yeah, but he's like reformed and now he's part of a church group.
Yeah, so like now he's a good guy.
Kenny Powers' his brother.
Well, all right, but damn near perfect against the Chiefs on Sunday, by the way, and now he has the controls.
We wanted to kick off though a little bit of talk about whether, you know, the tanking thing, since that's controlling the local narrative and national narrative about the Dolphins. And I'll kick it off by asking this question. I'll leave it open-ended for both of you to comment on. If you were to assume, let's just play games here, that the owner at the beginning of all this, he said, listen, I just want you to do four things. Just four things. That's it. He's like, one, clean up my books. Clean up the salary cap books. And you know what that means. You guys know the salary cap. So clean up the books. Two, get a high pick in 2020. Like, you know, be bad. All right. Three, don't be too bad though. Don't be like historically bad, especially at home. We don't want to like get everybody all dejected and make us, you know, a national laughing stock or anything like that. So be bad, but you know, not ridiculous, not 1-15, not 0-16, that sort of bad. And four, you know, he also asked you to, assemble like sort of a cachet of picks that you could maybe use to trade up and get your quarterback target if it's necessary next year in 2020. Those four things. So, you know, clean up my books, be bad, don't be too bad, get some extra picks. This is how they accomplished those things, what you just saw on Sunday and what you've seen with the roster and everything that we've been talking about. Did they blow it, or did they just do it too good? Simon.
did they blow it or did they do it too good? I mean, I don't really know. They've assembled a high school roster, so I think if that was what they were aiming to do, then they've done it perfectly. But I think that they will be people were saying, "Oh, I'm all in on this and it's fantastic," and then after like two quarters, when they're down 42-3. There were so many people bitching that, you can't expect it to, you can't expect people to be happy when this goes 16 games, which it clearly is going to. You know, as I said, and I've said for months, this team is historically terrible.
Oh, here it comes. It's coming.
We all know. I don't need to say it. We all know.
Simon from the top rope, go ahead.
No. I'll just leave it out there. But I said historically, this would be one of the worst teams. Ever.
You two boys, I gave you. Don't say I didn't give you the chance.
You did, and I didn't want to lay into both of you. So
you could have dunked. You could have dunked on me right there. All right.
No, but I just. I mean, what do people expect? I mean, I was talking to a Miami sports writer yesterday, who was in the press box and saying that this was, reverberating around not just the Miami press but the Baltimore press about how ridiculous some of the decisions were in the run-up to, inexplicable, that you cannot defend decisions of players that they got rid of, making it so obvious. Yes. But there are so many other issues that are around. What if Tungavalo doesn't come out? Which is, he can't be sitting there. He's not stupid. He can't sit wherever he sits in Alabama and think, the team that's almost certainly tanking for me because Tank for Tour has become a thing. He can't be sitting there thinking this is going to be fun on a team that's got maybe one player that would start on the Patriots team,
or Alabama.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I saw this evening there was talk of Minka Fitzpatrick being traded after the issues yesterday. Apparently, he said that he wasn't told why he was benched. He was given no indication as to what happened. He tried to speak to Coach Flores afterwards. Was told that there was nothing to say. Move on to next week. He doesn't seem like a particularly happy camper. So, I mean, who knows? But this is what people, this, if you're going to do it properly. But this just seems, like trading Tunsil seems odd now, because you just look at that roster and there's a handful of players that, and the players must realize that too. They must know there's only a handful of them that are going to be involved when it, in 2 or 3 years' time, when this thing maybe starts to turn around. So how do you sell the message if you're Flores and Greer? And I don't know whether you mentioned it in the other show, but 59-10, they've got to, I all of a sudden wonder whether or not they make it through the season. Chris Greer especially.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Ross told them that, you get rid of the money, get rid of the cap issues, and let's get one of those two quarterbacks. But to lose maybe 35-15 or 35-18 is fine, but to be blown out, that was so embarrassing.
It was the worst home loss in franchise history.
Yeah, and it could have been significantly worse as well.
It could have.
The Ravens, I know they fake punt, and I know that they did some other things, but the throwing late in the game.
A fourth and goal of 49 points.
But I get that, though, because if you kick a field goal, it's a difficult one, isn't it? If you're a coach, it's a difficult situation. Do you kick a field goal and know that you're going to get the points, or do you just go for it because you think that, you might turn the ball over? I mean, it's a tough one. But it could have been 65 or more, because they could have just kept on throwing. There was nothing that we could have done. Nothing they could have done.
They didn't even do half of what they probably could have done.
Ross has got to be massively embarrassed by what happened yesterday. And as much as I'm sure what he wanted was one of those quarterbacks and us to be in a position where we can rebuild, I don't think he thought being blown out at home in the first game by 49 points with a high school roster was the look he was going for. It's embarrassing.
But that sort of gets to the heart of the question, and I'll kick it over to you, Alf. But the question, because that third objective, don't be too bad. Don't be historically bad. Like, this is something that Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald, reported on a couple of weeks ago. He got clarification. It was from a Dolphin source or somebody close to the owner situation, clarifying what Steve Ross told them, what he wants. And it is clearly, you know, he wants to be bad. He just doesn't want to be too bad. Like he doesn't want to be historically bad. He's like, yes, I understand that we're going to be bad this year. And you know what? Quite frankly, he said that. That's when we complain about that first press conference that he conducted. He said it right then. Yes. He was like, you know, yes, we're going to be bad. I fired Adam Gase because I think he wants to win right now. We want to sort of engage a rebuild and do all this stuff. But somebody said, you know, does that mean going 4-12 or something like that? And he said, God, I hope we don't have to go 4-12 to do that. So what he was saying right away is, yeah, I don't want to be too bad. And 59-10 is that. They violated already one of his objectives.
Well, but he's insane. If he wants, what does he mean by not too bad? He wants to go 4-4 at home.
I think he said what he means.
7 on the road. Is that what he wants?
I think he said what he means. Yeah. I mean, not too bad. Don't take the worst home loss in franchise history in your first goddamn game.
But how do you engineer a 5-11 season? How do you do that? It's almost you either engineer.
No, that's not true. I don't buy that.
Or near 9-7.
I don't think it's all or nothing. I don't think you just go 0-16 and be 59-10 at home against the Ravens, you're 7-9.
Yeah, but in my opinion, if you set out to be bad, you can be historically bad. The 2007 team, somebody pointed it out today on Twitter. Go look at those scores again. That team went 1-15 and probably should have been 0-16 if not for Brian Billick. Go look at some of those scores. They lost 6 of the first 9 games by 3 points or less. 6 of the first 9 games.
Nobody can look at that game yesterday and think that team is going to win a single game or even be competitive in a single game.
Yeah, they're not. And that's the course that they set out on, and maybe they went a little bit too far, and I think they went way too far on the offensive line.
I mean, the line cannot protect. I mean, Fitzpatrick got hammered. They can't pass. They can't pass block.
He's going to die.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, the receivers did.
He better have life insurance. I hope he does. He's got a lot of kids. He needs life insurance.
Yeah. What I don't understand is this. If you're going to engage this tank, and this is what it is, it's a tank, okay, and you're going to rebuild, quote unquote rebuild, isn't part of the reason that you're going to jettison these expensive players like Kiko and, you know, Tunsil and, you know, potentially expensive in Tunsil, Kenny Stills, and then you're going to try to replace them with these diamonds in the rough. You're going to go out there and you're going to go fishing and you try to find all these guys. What did they really find? They found Preston Williams, and that's it. That's all.
And that was a UDFA. I mean, any team can sign a UDFA.
Yeah, so we have to show for it as far as a young player. Like, we had high hopes for Sam Agüevan. He had a rough start to his NFL career. But
yep.
What else is there? What, Christian Wilkins? He looked okay. I guess
that was your first round pick. I mean, that was
like he's supposed to be good. Like if
Charles Harris wasn't any sort of impact. I mean, how much time did Lamar Jackson have to throw the ball?
Oh God!
Look, we talked about Jerome Baker. I mean, I don't think Baker played very well.
No, he was bad.
At some point, we potentially have to have a conversation about Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, and we covered it quite a bit on the last pod. Okay.
Yes, we did.
And you're right. I fully believe. I'm with you.
They've either got to find a proper position for him, or we need to have a serious conversation about, is this kid really what we thought he was?
Yeah, and let me ask you, Simon, because I think this was really important. We talked about it in the last pod. Me and Chris were talking about, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I said the way he's, I'm not going to say acting, but the way he's subtly using all this, you know, this passive aggressive language through the media, usually that's reserved for a guy that's been in the league for 8 years and made 6 Pro Bowls. This guy's been here 2 years. He had a good rookie year. Is he chirping a little bit too much? Like, I was telling Chris, like, we don't need this aggravation. I am the last guy to tell players to just shut up and play, but we really do not need this right now, Minkah. So just shut up and play. What do you make?
He said, I want to play football. He said, I want to play football. I've lost games before, but it hasn't been like this. But I have lost games before. Like I said, all I can control is my attitude, the joy I have of this game, the passion I have of this game. That's it. I can't control anything else. This is when I asked whether or not he wanted to stay in Miami or be traded. So,
I mean, you know, if you're kind of wondering who might have gone chirping to their agent saying, you know, get me out of here, I think he kind of just put the target on his own back.
Yeah.
By hemming and hawing a little bit and sort of dissembling. But
I mean, six catches for 117 yards and three touchdowns against him wasn't great.
No,
that's not a good look.
No, it's not.
But, you know, and I brought this up, Simon, before. He played at Alabama. They didn't lose a lot. He says, I've lost games before. Yeah, but he played at Alabama. They didn't lose a lot. And they generally had a advantage over everybody that they were playing. They had an advantage in everything that they do over there, that coaching staff and the way that they operate versus the rest of the college landscape. He's gotten here and, you know, he put the last coaching staff directly on blast but we all like excused it with, you know, oh, they were the departing coaching staff. We hate them too. It's okay. But now he's sort of doing that with the current coaching staff and you're like, okay, he's establishing the kind of player he's going to be as a pro. And that's not going to sit well, but this is just one of many storylines that are going to spring up in a really bad season. I mean, that losing breeds this sort of shit. So
Shall I tell you who looks great in pass protection right now for Houston?
Who's that?
Oh, yeah.
Houston have just gone up 14-3 and Tunsil has just put on a clinic on that drive.
Watch him on run
false
play.
Start penalty, but yeah,
watch him on run play, Simon. He looks even better there.
Yeah, that screen, he was different class. And that's the point, because my argument is, having seen yesterday, although I knew it was going to be the same anyway, is that you don't need those extra picks for Tunsil to be able to secure Tagovailoa. There's not a team that's close to being as bad as we are.
Yes.
And that's the biggest issue for me.
And that's where I think that they went way too far. You don't need I said it on Twitter. You don't need to cut Tank Carradine and Nate Orchard. Those guys are not going to get you into the playoffs.
Okay? And also, Houston are now up 14-3 against the NFC favorite on the road, you know, and that first round pick that we get off them, you know, that's, and they're making it look easy. Yeah, of course it is. So all of a sudden you're looking, you know, you might be looking at Tua at one and Andrew Thomas or Tristan Wirt. All of a sudden you're looking at 26, 27, 28.
Yeah, right.
You know, really, is the 28th pick in the first round worth, one of the top eight left tackles in the game? Probably not.
Well, I'm gonna say that I don't think that they went too far if the goal is getting to a Tagovailoa. If you're sick of this shit, we've been in 20 years of the wilderness being lost in the woods here with the quarterback position, and you finally just want to end it. Okay.
I think my point is though that you're gonna get him anyway because the team is gonna be so. I can't see another team that's gonna be as bad as.
I thought so too.
But will you? But I don't know if I've ever really believed that, because bad is bad, and I get it's easy to be bad, and the Dolphins were set to be bad, and they're always going to be bad this year. But you know, there can be teams that are worse. I mean, there can be a team that shows up and just doesn't win a game and goes 1-15.
Look at those teams yesterday.
Yeah, and some of them looked pretty bad. Some of those teams looked pretty bad. The Jacksonville Jaguars just lost their quarterback for the season. They looked pretty bad during the game. Their defense imploded.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they lost to the Chiefs. So
the New York Giants, after sucker punching the Cowboys in the mouth, or was it the Cowboys that they're playing? They sucker punched them with an initial touchdown, and then absolutely, you know, just rolled over for the rest of the game. Okay. Yeah, and they were going to be, they were always going to be bad. Right.
And let me say this. I watched
that ownership.
I watched that Bengal team, and we always thought that the Bengals were a serious threat to us.
I didn't get to. I never did. They're way too good. Their team's way too good.
A good team.
They lost their last play of the game to the Seahawks on the road. They were never in competition.
Here's the thing. All of the teams that we thought were going to be in competition with the Dolphins or potentially be in competition for the number one overall pick, all of them lost yesterday. Okay. So I know that you're going to say, you know, oh, they were too competitive or they looked too good and stuff like that. Well, guess what? I mean, did you watch the Cleveland Browns when they went 0-16? They were competitive in several of those games. I mean, they looked like they should have gone 4-12. Okay. But they didn't. These were teams that were just good enough to lose.
But and the point is, is there any part of the Philadelphia team that lost by the Washington team that lost by six to Philly, or the Giants team when you know that, you know, with that offense? Because the Giants front office, the Giants ownership is not going to give up. That's a differently run team.
Yeah, but they don't block and tackle, do they?
But they're not going to give up on Daniel Jones, given all the fuss that was made about Daniel Jones. That's just not going to happen.
And let me say this: I watched that whole
the ownership.
Yeah.
If they fire Dave Gettleman and they fire Pat Shurmur and the new guys walk in and they've got the number one overall pick and they've got to make the decision between building their future with Tua Tagovailoa or building their future with Daniel Jones, and what do you think they're going to choose? What do you think are going to choose? The ownership of the Giants will let them decide. I guarantee that. Because they have that priority straightened out.
Which part of that Miami team do you think is beating the Giants? The Miami team that you saw yesterday, because there's not a single part of that team that's living with the Giants.
The Miami team that we saw yesterday, or the Miami team that we were talking about 3 weeks ago before they kicked out Laremy Tunsil, before they kicked out Kenny Stills, Kiko Alonso, T.J. McDonald, Tank Carradine, Vincent Taylor, and then churned 26% of the roster 3 days before the season began.
Yeah,
I mean, that team, maybe
still a terrible team. Still a terrible team.
Still not a good. Still a terrible team. But maybe, yeah, they could have beaten the Giants. That's what I'm saying. They needed to go this far. They needed to go this far.
Let me say, I watched a lot of football yesterday. Okay, and then I rewatched some of it. The Redskins were beating up on the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Philadelphia Eagles is a very popular Super Bowl pick this year. Okay. Then the game just turned on them, and then, you know, bad teams do what bad teams do, which is they blow 20-7 leads, okay? But the Giants, that score was not reflective of the way that game was being played. They just got beat on, like, five plays total, and those five plays made the entire difference of the game. They also had some really rough refereeing.
Do you know what the score was of the Dolphins' first game of the season when they went 1-15?
Yeah, they lost in overtime to the Redskins.
Yeah, 16-13, they lost in overtime. They were competitive in that game.
Yeah, and the Redskins were a playoff team that year. So, yeah, it gets weirder. But no, this team, what they did, if the ultimate question is, did they go too far? I think they went way too far. They didn't need to do all of this to ensure that they were going to be bad.
Now, if they need Tua Tagovailoa, then I could even argue they haven't gone far enough.
Nah, I'm with you. I think they did just enough. Like, the only thing that's left is to set fire to the Davy facility, like, and say we're suspending practices for the rest of the year. That's the only thing they can do.
I think you got to go all in. If it's just this stuff that we've heard about, where Steve Ross wanted a high pick, and, you know, maybe be able to trade for a guy, and hopefully maybe you can get a shot at Tua Tagovailoa. But, you know, if not, then Justin Herbert, you know, they got the guys that they like, and that's fine. They just want a quarterback. If that's your goal, then yeah, absolutely. They went through the floor. I mean, they went way too far. If the goal is Tua Tagovailoa, listen, this is a generational quarterback. This is going to be the guy that leads us out of the wilderness out of 20 years, and that's what we need, then this is what they did, and they needed to do it, probably.
Now, let me ask you this, Simon. You saw Lawrence this weekend.
Yep.
One of our listeners asked me this question, and because that's all they listen to is, you know, the Dolphin fan right now is hearing a lot of Tua Tagovailoa, but they're also hearing some of Lawrence, and you
some?
Know, they saw these two guys play.
Practically all I hear about now.
Yeah, so what is the difference? I know the difference, but most of our listeners don't. What is the difference between those two, and who is the better prospect in your eye right now?
Well, I mean, the difference is one is eligible next year and the other isn't. I mean, ultimately, yes. That's what it comes down to. Okay. I mean, they're two very different players. I mean, what I find quite interesting is that you get a lot of people on social media saying Tua sucks and he was terrible in the national championship game against Clemson. And that's fine. He didn't play very well. He was injured. It's also the one game that 75% of people have actually watched, haven't seen anything else. You know, what you have to take into consideration are all the other games. And people say, oh, he didn't beat, you know, the teams he beat weren't very good. And this, well, you know, that's not really what NFL scouts, general managers are looking for. I mean, well, obviously winning
games. Also, he did beat some good teams. I mean,
exactly. LSU and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, but what teams are looking for, and I think this is what people forget, is arm strength, touch, accuracy, leadership, all those sorts of things that they're not necessarily looking for. Did he beat so-and-so? What was his completion percentage against Georgia Southern? It's not about that. It's about looking at the skills and the talents that people have and conveying that to the next level, how that will fit in an NFL team, in an NFL offense, in the NFL. That's how it works. I think if you're going to line them up one against the other, they are 1A and 1B. And I know people that, NFL people, we all know NFL people who would have Tua at 1A and Trevor at 1B. And we also know people that would have it the other way around. Trevor is taller, significantly taller. I saw him 2 years ago when I went to see him in high school, and he looks bigger physically now than he did 2 years ago. He's obviously been in the weight program. He is a very big 6'6". He looks like close to 6'7". He's very mobile. He's got a big arm. He has some issues with touch. If you're going to pick holes, he has some issues with touch. There are a couple of throws that he could have, with better touch, would have had other big plays. But what he does, he throws people open. His back shoulder throws are a thing of beauty. And he threw a pass to T. Higgins at the weekend, which Dane Brugler said was badly behind T. Higgins. It wasn't. It was actually perfectly. It was behind him, but it was the only place that he could complete it, because not only did he have a corner in coverage, he had a safety coming across that would have picked it off. It was just a perfect throw. Tua is more mobile. I mean, Lawrence is mobile. Tua is more mobile. He's smaller. He's just under 6'1". He's a big old 226 pounds, I think he measured in when they measured him.
He weighed 30 right before camp.
Is he 230?
Yeah, he's lost weight. He's down to something like 215 now. Yeah.
Okay. And he looked, he showed some serious wheels with that touchdown at the weekend. He's got touch, he's got accuracy, he's got a big arm, he's got vision. Yeah, he's got Devontae Smith and Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy to throw to. But you can't, that can't be used as a knock against him. The guy, he still has to get the ball to the guys in the right places, which he does. The fact that he's got NFL talent receivers isn't his fault.
But so does Trevor Lawrence. Exactly.
Lawrence has Justin Ross and T. Higgins and Amani Rodgers and the two
Travis
the
number Etienne.
One number, exactly, the number one, number two receivers in the country that came in, high school receivers in the country, both went to Clemson. He has legitimate talent. So does Jake Fromm. All these guys have good players to throw to. But they are just difference makers. They are just, and we've said it probably since this podcast started, that if you got the chance to draft Tua, then you do so and don't look back, because he is that transcendent talent. To me, he's the best quarterback since Andrew Luck. And I didn't see John Elway, but to me, he's the best college quarterback I have seen since I started following this game. And this is my 35th season as a fan. And I followed the college game pretty intensely. So yeah,
I'm old enough to have seen John Elway.
Okay,
I'll leave you with this though. For whatever it's worth, I mean, because we just saw Trevor Lawrence play Texas A&M, and they were number 16 ranked, and he went 24-35 for 268, one touchdown and one interception. All right, it's and the NCAA rating is about 137, something like that. Last year when Tua played Texas A&M, they were also ranked number 16, and he went 22 of 30 for 387 yards, four touchdowns and zero interceptions. Okay, so I mean, this is not, and he also he added a rushing touchdown, just by the way. It's not that I'm not saying that Tua is leagues better than Trevor Lawrence or something, but they're mismatched. Tua's 1 year ahead, so that matters. And we'll see what Trevor is by the end. All I'm saying is, right now, as far as mapping these guys over to NFL offenses, the stuff that you see Tua Tagovailoa processing on the field, and the speed that he's operating with on the field maps over a lot better right now. Clearly, Trevor Lawrence has the gun. I mean, this guy has a friggin' golden rifle. I mean, it's amazing.
I have a very simple philosophy on all of this. You're setting us up for this disastrous historical season. Then it better be for Tua Tagovailoa, and I don't want to hear about tanking two seasons to get Trevor Lawrence.
That's right. I'll
tell you this. There were four scouts in front of us on Clemson. I mean, there were about 60, but in our block, there were four scouts, two from AFC teams, two from NFC teams. And when they showed a highlight of Tua's second touchdown pass, Which was the beautiful right sort of down, I can't remember who it was to, in the right-hand corner of the end zone. All four of them turned to look at each other and just shook their heads. And one of them was just like, the guy's ridiculous. And these are guys that are here, you know, these are legitimate, and these are proper NFL scouts. These are not just guys from magazines. These are guys with the hats and the jerseys, you know, with their teams affiliated mm-hmm. to. I chatted to a couple of the guys, and they are, you know, they know mm-hmm. what we know. Yeah. You know, he is a different... just a different, the ball comes off his hand differently. Like Chris says, processes differently. It's just a different level.
And it's his comfort level. Like if you watch him, and I'm not one of these guys that like to talk about body language or whatever, but I'm going to talk about body language. Look at his face. He plays the game with a joy, and that's because he's comfortable. He's comfortable playing with these guys. He's playing at the highest level in college, and he knows he's better than everybody else around him. That means something, especially translating to the NFL. When he's
going, you know, my only worry about him, though, you know, what would be my only worry, mm-hmm.
injury.
Like okay, two worries. What we're talking about right now with Minka Fitzpatrick, we all swore that he was like, you know, the best character you've ever seen, right? Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, these guys played at Alabama, where they won a ton, never really lost much, and maybe are a little bit in a bubble there. And they go to a bad team, a losing team, where maybe there are some questionable coaching decisions, or maybe not. Maybe everything they're doing is perfectly justifiable. But either way, you know, what happens when they get into that different, more challenging environment? Do we see, like, what do we see out of Tua Tagovailoa when the chips are really down? Like we're kind of seeing a little bit, catching a little glimpse of with Minka Fitzpatrick. That would be my only concern.
The family is a concern for me.
Yeah.
In that it's just he comes from a different culture, a different background. Their wants and needs are different. You know, there's a lot of family members with a lot of fingers in a lot of pies. I don't mean that in a bad way at all, but there's just a lot going on there. They've always been very, very influential in what he does. Every move he makes, famously, they've all moved from the islands to Alabama. They all live in Alabama to make sure that he's okay. Obviously, his brother's there now as well. That would be one slight issue that I would, you know, I would have. But beyond that, I just think, like you say, it's a generational talent.
But to be fair, can we even think of an NFL player that's had a helicopter parent problem?
No.
I mean,
yes.
These guys are in college, right? And they don't have anybody on their side. Right. They're not being paid. They're not being, you know, allegedly. They're not being, you know, they don't have the resources certainly that they will in the NFL. They're not fully grown, mature men yet. And so they have family looking out for them. And that's perfectly understandable. And in fact, it's something you want. And now they get to the NFL and they have loads of money and they have the resources to, you know, to take care of the things they need to take care of. They're getting more mature. They're growing up. I just haven't seen a helicopter parent be a problem.
All right. On the way out here, we haven't even talked about the New England Patriots.
Oh, Christ. We have to talk about them.
Let's just do a prediction and get out of here.
Well, I'll ask you two questions. Simon, how good are the Patriots this year? How good are they going to be this year? And give me a score on Sunday.
I mean, they looked scary good last night against a pretty average, what looked like a pretty average Pittsburgh team. But, you know, they just made them look average, didn't they? They shut everybody down. Juju wasn't a factor. They couldn't get any of the second and third receivers going. James Conner wasn't a factor. You know, they've got such great receivers, but they ran the ball a lot. And you're thinking, well, it's going to be Sony Michel and then it's going to be James White. Well, actually, it was Rex Burkhead. That, you know, next week it'll be James White. The week after it'll be Michel. Then it'll be, you know, Antonio Brown will have 200 yards. Then it'll be Josh Gordon. Then it'll be back to, you know, Brandon Bolden. It's just, if they're not in the Super Bowl, I'll be absolutely staggered. In terms of result of the weekend, I mean, I think it would probably be 45-14, the Patriots, maybe,
that one's,
against the Dolphins.
That one's right there with me. All right.
And I think they probably take Brady out. You know, Stidham probably scores a couple of touchdowns. Yeah, 45-14.
I think so. You take a defense that was already pretty good last year, and we saw them and how they performed in the Super Bowl. you get Jamie Collins back and yeah. You sub in, I know they lost Trey Flowers, but they subbed in Michael Bennett for him. And yeah. Michael Bennett, you know, does many of the same things. It's uncanny. They still got Gilmore Chung, the McCourty brothers, and Jonathan Jones, who they just gave an extension to. They even kept Danny Shelton so that he can kind of play as a
Kyle Van Noy didn't even play last night, did he?
Yeah, no, Kyle Van Noy didn't even play.
He's a lead tackler.
Yeah, and it was Jamie Collins and Donta Hightower the whole game. And you know, so you add all those guys to what was already a good defense, and it's just, you know, then on offense, now they just got Antonio Brown in addition to what, you know, Josh Gordon is playing. He's not suspended. He's good. It's so maddening, and they're going to win the Super Bowl again this year. And I truly, truly believe that. And I think they might be even better than they were last year on the way. And so this game is going to end poorly for the Dolphins. There's not going to be a surprise.
No, it won't be a surprise.
I hate to say it.
The only thing the Dolphins have on their side is the propensity for the Patriots to play down to us here in Miami. So for that, I'm going to pick Patriots 42, Dolphins 20.
Wow.
And that's
I don't think the Dolphins are going to score 20 because I don't think I think that the Ravens
a better defense.
The Ravens let up off the gas. I really believe that the Ravens defense let up off the gas in a way that the New England Patriots, the way they coach their defense, they generally don't. And so I think they're going to keep up keep their foot on the gas the entire game. I think we're going to be lucky to score a single touchdown in this game. And I would say more like 6 points. And on the other side of the ball, and the Patriots are going to do whatever they want. The only reason I would go a little bit lower in the score, like 35, is because I think they're going to want to get their running game going. Like there are things
fifth preseason game.
It's almost like a preseason game. You get to choose what you want to establish against the Dolphins because they can't really defend anything right now. So they're going to want to get Sony Michel going in a way that they didn't necessarily last week.
And let me say this as well. Belichick will want revenge for the miracle.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The miracle in Miami. You're right.
All right, we got to get out of here. That's it. There is no more. I would tell you to enjoy the game, but, you know, unfortunately, you probably know what's coming. That's it. There is no more. We will talk to you guys again on Monday.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Hey, this is Seth Levitt, who you may not know.
And OJ McDuffie.
Who you definitely know.
And we're getting ready to dive back into the fish tank.
That's right, Juice. Season 2 of the Fish Tank podcast right here on the 5 Reasons Sports Network kicks off on Tuesday, August 6th with our biggest catch yet. Hall of Famer Jason Taylor.
I got the first hit in, and then he proceeded to grab my face mask, and I swear to God, I've never seen anybody throw so many uppercuts in so little time. And he hit me in my stomach, my solar plexus, and my esophagus. But it was like a boomerang. Like I just kept boomeranging. But the whole time he was holding my face mask and my head couldn't move. Hey, bobblehead. Like this was boomerang before boomerang. He was even out on phones.
So don't miss JT, OJ, DJ Preach, and myself.
And all new guests.
And most importantly, more of the best Miami Dolphins stories that you've never heard.
Exactly, Big Seth. We've got an amazing lineup of your favorite Dolphins from guys I played with to guys I looked up to, and even some players you'll be cheering for this season.
Hey, don't forget those of us who work behind the scenes,
too. Yeah, you know I won't do that, man, because the Fish Tank takes you where no other Dolphin podcast can, with some of the funniest, wildest, and most interesting stories of what goes on with your favorite team, players, and coaches when the cameras aren't watching.
You can find the Fish Tank on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you do your podcast listening. So subscribe and start downloading today.
Thanks for diving in.